welcome to Higher Ed, KUT's podcast focusing on issues of higher education, lifelong learning, and exercising the brain. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT 90.5, Austin's NPR station, talking as always with Dr. Ed Berger, president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Jennifer. Welcome to my beautiful campus.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. My pleasure. You're always welcome here.
Well, thank you.
You're a student of life.
I am a student of life, and I know our listeners are students of life also. You know, speaking of students, I was at my 30th high school reunion not too long ago.
Oh, you're a baby. 30 high school reunion.
30. It was great. It was so fun. I got to see some people I hadn't seen in a long time, including a friend of mine from high school who we hadn't seen each other in a long time. She's a huge fan of the podcast. She discovered it online. Very complimentary. She really likes it. And we got to chatting about the podcast, and she'd recently contacted me with an idea for an episode, and I want to tell you what her idea is. So this is what she wrote.
Okay.
I've come to realize that my family's poverty had an impact on my learning. My mom worked hard to provide the necessities for us, including books, anyone she could get her hands on. But looking back, the constant need to take care of the here and now affected my learning, focusing it on memorizing to pass the test right now instead of learning. And her question is, am I an outlier or does poverty affect how people learn? And she went on to ask, are there things that high schools and colleges can do to help students who are coming from backgrounds similar to this, where there are a lot of challenges that may have impacted the ability to fully absorb and have that educational experience?
Well, I mean, what a great story and what a great question about does poverty affect how people learn? I'd like to touch on that, but let me just start off by answering the second thing that you threw in there, which is how can institutions kind of foster a diversity in kind of learning skills or just kind of learning backgrounds. And institutions do this. I mean, at Southwestern, in fact, we've got faculty right now in the natural sciences, but I think it's actually going to spread, that are thinking about bridge programs. So programs that would take students who traditionally either don't go into the natural sciences or struggle, first generation, underrepresented individuals in natural science, and offer them a summer program, part on campus, part online virtual, to basically offer some infrastructure to allow them to hit the ground as a first year student at Southwestern University kind of with the same or at least commensurate background as students who maybe didn't experience that, or someone that experienced the kind of poverty that your classmate might have experienced. It's interesting. It gets back to something that we talked about quite a while ago, which is what is the definition of education? And I think that depending upon socioeconomic status, you will get different definitions.
So what do you mean by that?
So for example, is education there to learn a skill that you can then reproduce? Is it there to get a diploma so I can get a starting job and a starting salary? Or is it there to become your best self and to flourish? I think that sometimes you will find, especially for families that just haven't experienced a lot of higher education, they tend to think of it more as a skill and kind of a way out of poverty. And by the way, I think there could not be a more truer sentiment, which is that education is maybe the best way out of poverty. Because of my own thinking of education, which is it allows an individual to flourish. And so if you think about education as allowing an individual to become his or her best self, then you can accomplish anything that you are capable of rather than confining yourself to a skill set because it either seems manageable or doable or, you know, I think I can do that. I could imagine myself. It's an imagination question too. And I think that people, an individual in poverty that could imagine, you know, herself doing something really huge and lofty will tend to realize that more than a person that just says, well, I'll just have to kind of accept this as my lot in life and do that. So to me, it's an interesting question. Does poverty affect how we learn? I think the answer is yes, because poverty affects how we view education and what we're supposed to get out of school. And for me, education is the most freeing thing. And so, you know, at Southwestern, for example, we have all sorts of programs to provide financial aid packages and scholarships to really talented students who otherwise couldn't even afford to have this kind of intimate residential liberal arts experience at Southwestern University. And many schools, of course, offer that kind of same opportunity. But it's a commitment that we as an institution have to make because we want, in fact, to – it's part of social justice – is to allow people with the ability and the talent to rise up to that level of greatness rather than to kind of keep them squelched down because of poverty.
I think there is also a way in which circumstances in a very sort of physical and real way can impact learning. You know, if you don't have access to technology nowadays or books, you know, in previous days, I think there is a part of the scene where that has to have some kind of impact. I hear what you're saying about being able to think beyond the circumstances. I think the circumstances must weave in there in some way, hopefully not an overriding way where that's the only thing that is impacting a situation. But I think, you know, I think we can all imagine how different kinds of circumstances, and they may be temporary or permanent, can impact our experiences.
Absolutely. And the technology thing that you mentioned at the beginning, I think that that will eventually kind of disappear. But I remember several years ago when if I were to use some technology flipped classroom type stuff, there were students that, you know, didn't have computers, didn't have laptops because they just couldn't afford it. And so that was an issue, and it created this kind of break in how people learned and how people kind of understood and processed information. I think that's going away as technology becomes more available to everybody. But I think just mindsets and traditions and practices, for example, you know, the importance of family. I think that that's something that transcends and kind of moves in different directions depending on where you are. Some people, you know, need to kind of be with family. Some people, you know, some students want to live at home because that's just part of the tradition of the family and what defines the family. And I think that those issues are impactful to learning too.
So you said family. That makes me think of the puzzler that we have in front of us.
That was
because
good.
It's very much about familial relations.
That's
that
true.
Plays a key role, I think, in solving the puzzle.
So, and your friend talked about her mom finding books.
Yes.
And things.
Yes.
Well, this was a puzzle.
This is all about moms.
About two mothers and two daughters.
Okay.
There were two mothers and two daughters. They went for Sunday brunch, and they ordered, they consumed a total of 3 Belgian waffles, and each person ate exactly 1 Belgian waffle. And the question is, how is this possible? And I remember from last time, in fact, I see that you still have the diagram from last time.
I brought it back just to help.
And I think you might have this one. So do you want to share
your
thinking?
So first I sketched out 4 stick figures because mm-hmm. you have 2 mothers and 2 daughters. And I thought, but wait a minute, a person can have more than one role.
Mm.
So a mother could be a mother and a daughter. So what I sketched out is I have 3 stick figures: grandmother, mother, and daughter. The mother, who is in the middle, is a mother and a daughter. So she kind of does double duty. So you've got 2 mothers and 2 daughters. It's just the 2 of those are contained in one person. So they each eat a waffle, and there's your 3 waffles.
That is absolutely correct. Congratulations. That's right. And it's interesting how you kind of came to that, because you drew the 4, which is the first thing, because you hear 2 and 2. And you realize that it's not possible. And then the next thing you drew was just to have 3, and then realize that one of those stick figures must play the role of 2. And then you realize that there could be a grandmother who's also a mother. And that's exactly right. Good for you. Look at you. You're such a genius.
Well, let's not get carried away.
All right. It
makes me think back, though, to – there was a previous episode where the puzzler dealt with the number 8.
Mm-hmm.
And we needed to come up with a way that 8 eights could add up to 1,000. And I had a math thing that wasn't going to work. And you said, well, hey, let's break this down and let's start with the fact that we know we've got to end with a 0.
Mm-hmm.
So in this
That's
one,
right.
you think, well, we've got it. There are only 3 waffles. So we're not cutting up waffles. We're not asking.
Exactly.
We're not ordering. We know that our end game is 3 waffles. So you can also look at this as working backwards from the 3 waffles. So how do you work backwards from 3 waffles? Well, you've got to only have 3 people. How
That's
is
right.
that possible?
That's right.
And then it kind
Comes
of starts
together.
Rolling. Yeah, yeah.
By the way, when you just said that, can I go off script?
Sure.
We don't have a script, but I mean, go off subject. You mentioned you only have three waffles and there's no cutting up. Do you want to hear an interesting mathematical theorem?
Sure.
This is completely off the wall.
Sure.
It is a mathematical theorem that you can take a solid object like a waffle.
Okay.
And you can cut it up into many, many pieces and reassemble those pieces so that you actually end up having two waffles that are identical in size and shape and weight than to the first one.
How on earth?
Yes. Isn't that a really interesting theorem?
That is kind of mind-blowing.
It's mind-blowing.
Yes.
And the secret, because then you wonder, why can't we do this with, like, you know, gasoline or with food and just make food abundant?
Right, sure.
Right. And the answer is because you'd have to cut these things up in ways that it's impossible to actually cut up. But theoretically,
you could.
There is a way of cutting these up into a finite number of pieces. You could take a solid ball, and you can cut it up into a finite number of pieces, reassemble them, so you have two balls of the same size as the original ball, but the pieces are so jagged, they're almost like cloud-like. I mean, you can never actually do it. But
wow.
it's a theorem.
Interesting.
Sorry.
All right, maybe in a future episode, I want you to just go through a theorem like this and
really?
Walk us through how on earth you figured that out. But
it's called the Banach-Tarski paradox.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
So as we wrap up this conversation, I want to actually go back to a topic that came up in a previous episode, because I think there's some relation to our question on the table here about how poverty and other circumstances can affect learning. I'm thinking back to our discussion about standardized tests,
mm-hmm.
which you are not a fan of.
Correct.
No, you're not pulling any punches there. Not
no.
a fan of standardized tests.
Nope.
One of the criticisms of standardized tests that we've heard over time is that they are very much circumstance related. So mm-hmm. that students who've grown up in different circumstances, because they haven't had the same experience in their lives, different questions are going to be challenging or not for different students, depending on where they're coming from in their lives outside the classroom.
That's right. I mean, the A in SAT is aptitude. And I do not believe that these exams truly measure that, at least accurately or fully, because if someone hasn't been exposed to some of the things that you're talking about, they still might have the aptitude, but just not the background and the experience. And they're being punished for that. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. So this whole discussion, it's a brilliant question about how something like poverty could impact learning, you know, and both in the classroom and then beyond the classroom.
And this is, you know, a question in the political arena in this country, which is, you know, how do you offer access to education for as wide of an audience and wide of a population as wants it? I said, like, for example, at Southwestern, you know, we offer an enormous millions and millions and millions of dollars in scholarship financial aid funding to allow students who otherwise couldn't afford it. But at a national level, it's an interesting question because it comes back to what defines education. And are we looking to credential a particular skill set, or are we looking to have individuals grow and thrive? In my opinion, I think the grow and thrive model is the real way out of poverty. Whereas just being able to do a particular kind of skill thing, I mean, some skills actually could be quite lucrative, but to me, it's the life enriching promise of oneself that really is the gift of education.
Can't you have both of those experiences simultaneously, though? Perhaps learning a skill, but also learning not just the skill, but expanding your mind. Can those two coexist?
They absolutely can, but not very likely, you know, in a classroom that has, you know, 500 people and you're sitting in the back and you can barely see whoever the instructor is. That happens through the human interaction and interdiscourse and conversation and learning from each other. And that happens at the small liberal arts colleges such as Southwestern University. There's a little plug right there. I got a little plug right there. By the way, what if someone wants to send another question in?
Well,
so this was sent in
by someone
that you know.
A friend and a high school classmate of mine had sent in this question. We love hearing from listeners. You guys are often the source of our most interesting discussion topic. So please email me, J Staton. That's S-T like Tom, A-Y-T-O-N, J Staton at KUT.org. Send me those emails and we'll chat about those in future episodes.
And they should come in. If you're ever in Central Texas, just north of Austin, you should come and visit Southwestern University and see our beautiful campus that Jennifer keeps glowing about.
Thank you, Ed, for helping us keep our brain sharp. Dr. Ed Berger is president of Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. You can find out more at southwestern.edu. And you can keep your brain busy by keeping up with the news and other episodes of Higher Ed at KUT.org. You can also find Higher Ed on iTunes. I'm Jennifer Staton with KUT News.